This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Eschelbach, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Eschelbach.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now, the pro-life news.
This is your AFA Indiana News Minute. Indiana officials say two baby boxes, newborn incubators that allow women to anonymously surrender their infants, are illegal under state law and must be removed. In a letter sent earlier this month to Safe Haven Baby Boxes, the nonprofit organization that installed the boxes, Indiana's Department of Child Services said the boxes are not a legal way for mothers to give up their babies, and the agency warned women who use the boxes could face child abandonment charges. But Safe Haven founder and director Monica Kelsey said the organization will not remove the boxes and will continue plans to install more across the state. In a letter to Indiana Governor Mike Pence, Attorney James Bopp said DCS has no legal basis for the position that baby boxes are currently unlawful. There's more online at afain.net. The American Family Association of Indiana, a voice for Hoosier families.
Today we have with us Dr. Matthew Harrison, and he has recently come out with what we call the abortion pill reversal kit. And if you saw a couple weeks ago, there was a press release because the chemical used for, or I should say the medicine used for medical abortions, the FDA increased the amount of time throughout the pregnancy that you're able to use that. And so these kits came out at a great time because of that, combating now this extra time that we have to do medical abortions in. So today to talk with us about that is Dr. Matthew Harrison. Hi, doctor.
Hi, Abigail. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is, of course, a bit of an intricate topic, and so it's wonderful to have somebody with your expertise join us. You're the Associate Medical Director of Abortion Pill Reversal, right?
Correct.
And that is really quite the position. Could you tell us a little bit about how you came to be such an influential person in the pro-life movement?
Sure. Well, I've certainly experienced that, you know, God seems to use his least qualified folks to do some pretty incredible things, mainly to, I think, show his power and his awesomeness. But I grew up in a Christian home and a pro-life home. And when I went to medical school, I had a few battles against kind of pro-abortion type of students and faculty. But after I went to residency, I really made a commitment there that, and I was the doctor signing the prescriptions, that I wasn't going to refer for abortions or encourage those. And so after leaving residency, I went to a little town north of Charlotte, North Carolina, and joined a practice that is was considered a natural family planning only practice. In other words, we didn't prescribe contraception. We didn't refer for sterilization, abortion, or any of those types of things. And so our practice was doing very, very well. And Flip Benham, who has been in the pro-life movement for years and years, moved to that town, and I knew their next-door neighbor. So our neighbor said, y'all really need to get together and talk. So I had Flip and his family over to the house, and he challenged me with a question that I think was a pivotal point for me. He said, you know, if you could make a deal with the devil, and the devil said, I will let you have all the babies, I will not do any more abortions, but if you can just give me this one baby with Down syndrome and allow an abortion for that baby, would you make that deal? And that was a really, really tough question, because you're really saying, how pro-life am I? Am I willing to concede the life of one person for possibly the lives of millions? And of course, we could never really trust the devil. He's a liar.
Right, yeah.
But Flip brought it right to the forefront. And, you know, if you're willing to give up one, you're willing to give up everything. Mm. And so he really kind of nailed it down there. And I said, you know what? I can't do that. I can't sacrifice even one baby. And so he was having an event, a national event here in the town, and Father Frank Pavone was being a part of that, and he has been friends with Father Frank for years and years. And so since my family's Catholic, he said, why don't you meet with Father Frank and you take him around for the week and, you know, kind of host him, which I did. And that was a fantastic opportunity and really gave me new avenues for being involved in pro-life activism. So with Flip and his friends and with Father Frank, we started doing different pro-life events. We started going down to the abortion clinic and offering help on the sidewalk. And we would offer free prenatal and delivery services for women who chose life for the babies.
Wonderful.
And so it really, we got to see them not just at the abortion clinic, but throughout their pregnancies and then during delivery. And then afterwards, we'd follow up because we would become their pediatricians. And so it's such a rewarding time to practice pro-life medicine. And so that really solidified me in the pro-life movement.
Great. Yeah, that's a wonderful story. And now you're the medical advisor for Priests for Life?
So I'm one of the medical advisors for Priests for Life, and we answer questions that viewers and listeners, you know, call into their shows or write them letters and say, we have this ethical dilemma, you know, could you give us some guidance as to what kind of things we should be thinking about when we're making decisions, you know, life and death decisions, end of life decisions, or abortion decisions, all that type of thing.
And then you're also an instructor at the Campbell School of Osteopathic Medicine.
Yes.
And it looks like the medical director of a student health clinic at Belmont Abbey College.
Right. So Campbell School of Osteopathic Medicine has contracted with our hospital, where I'm a full-time hospitalist, and the students come there, and each month I get a different student, mm-hmm. and, you know, I take them around and just teach them basic medicine. And it's a great opportunity to see how they're thinking, to talk to them about pro-life medicine. Many of them have seen me when I'm, you know, have to stop and do an interview here or there for something. And then, you know, they'll look it up on the internet and see about the abortion pill reversal program and that type of thing. So it's an interesting opportunity for them to get a different viewpoint on medicine. And then I go down to Belmont Abbey and the director of the student health clinic there. So
great. Yeah. You know, you've mentioned now twice having, well, the first time it was having conversations with fellow students when you were going through med school. But then also you mentioned it with these students who are now learning from you, giving the idea of giving a different perspective, which would imply, of course, that then during medical school, they're picking up a perspective that maybe isn't pro-life.
For the most part, yes.
Could you expand on that for us a little bit?
Well, you know, medicine for a lot of doctors is not so much about saving life. Unfortunately, many times it's about control, and it's about being at the forefront of, I guess, controlling a patient's health and that type of thing. And so they find it fascinating when they can find new ways of new medical procedures, new medications that can control the human body. And, of course, our culture has certainly been leaning and migrating towards, you know, this idea of a person's choice is essentially their God. That's what messed up Adam and Eve in the first place. But, you know, a patient's choice has now become sacrosanct. And so it has gotten away from, you know, what's best for a patient and now has become essentially medicine based on what a patient wants. And so this is part of the problem, honestly, with overuse of narcotics and lots of things in medicine where the medical community has failed the public and failed their patients by not providing what's best for them, but rather trying to provide just what the patient wants. And so when a patient comes in and is under a lot of duress because she has become pregnant unexpectedly, then immediately trying to solve that problem becomes forefront in the doctor's mind. And many times they're trying to help the patient. They're sincerely trying to help and be a good doctor. But in the end, you know, we see these patients that have gone through abortions and different procedures as suffering for years and years and years with depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, and that type of thing.
Right, yeah. But I can see how that the interest in finding, okay, how can we control this? How can we manipulate our environment and what we have to make it do what we want? I can see how that could really pull you in and and become your focus pretty easily without you recognizing it, maybe too.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's scientifically, a lot of these procedures and medications are fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fascinating that they can do what they do. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean that just because we can do something, that doesn't mean we should do something. And so it becomes a problem with medical ethics.
Yeah, and we're starting to see that too, I feel like, a lot in the in vitro fertilization area and in surrogacy now too.
Absolutely.
We have the ability, and through CRISPR and gene editing and all that kind of thing. But right, that point that just because we can do it doesn't mean that we should. Not all progress is good progress.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about how and you got involved with abortion pill reversal?
Sure. So in 2006, I was in my office, and I was on the board of the local crisis pregnancy center, and I got a call from their nurse screener saying that they had just received a call from a young lady, a 19-year-old, who had taken the abortion pill, but she regretted it, and she wanted to know if there's anything that could be done. So I did not know, but told her to send her over, and I would talk with her. So Ashley came to my office with her mother. She had, you know, been promised by her boyfriend that if she ever got pregnant, he'd take care of them. But of course, once she did become pregnant, he gave her, you know, a couple hundred dollars and said, here, go get an abortion.
Yeah.
And so she took the pill in front of the abortionist,
right?
Who watched her take the pill. She never got to see the heartbeat, never got to see her baby. And they said, you know, take the Cytotec, the second part of the procedure, at home, and then come back in 2 weeks and we'll recheck you. And she actually immediately regretted it and asked them what could be done to stop it. And of course, they said nothing. Mm-hmm. And that if you don't take the second pill, that the baby will likely die anyway, will stay inside of you, you'll have bleeding, infection, it'll cause you problems. And then they said if the baby does somehow, perchance, survive, it'll have, you know, deformities, it'll be mentally slow. You know, they used all these scare tactics against her. So she was really torn. She went home, and that's when she told her mother that she was pregnant and what she had done. And so her mother wanted to support her daughter and also support her grandchild. So she went to the crisis pregnancy center, and they came over. So I told Ashley that I really had no idea what to do, that, you know, this is not the type of thing they teach us about in medical school.
Yeah.
And so I went out of the office, out of the exam room, and went to my office and literally prayed about what I should do. Started looking through the physician desk reference at RU46, how it works, and noticed that it's essentially a progesterone blocker. So it mimics progesterone, which is a natural hormone that supports pregnancy, which is in the woman's body. And it mimics it and tricks the body into thinking that there's good progesterone around, and it blocks those receptors. So the baby then starves, does not get the good nutrition, and essentially the placenta separates away from the uterus, and then a couple days later, the woman takes Cytotec, which causes contractions of the uterus, and she expels the baby at home. And so, you know, I started thinking about that, and I'd done some research and published in protein receptor science, and, you know, I knew that very rarely do proteins and receptors bond and never come off. They're always in a state of flux. You know, the key is going into the lock and coming out, going into the lock, coming out. And there's always some type of equilibrium there. And so I said, you know, if we could just flood the system with good keys, with good progesterone, maybe we could outcompete that bad progesterone, the RU46, and supplement the body and support the pregnancy, and maybe the baby will survive. So I told Ashley the plan, told her that it had never been done and that she ran the risk of, you know, retaining a baby that had died, you know, having a lot of bleeding, that type of thing. But she knew all the risks and she said, I don't care. You know, we've known for years and have used progesterone in pregnancy for 25, 30 years. And we know that it's safe, that the progesterone that we give is safe. But we just didn't really know exactly how well it would work in reversing this abortion.
Right.
So we gave her a shot of progesterone and told her to come. This was on a Friday, told her to come back Monday. That weekend, she started bleeding, and she called us, and we told her to go to the emergency room. And at the emergency room, she got to see her baby's heartbeat for the first time, and she was so thrilled.
Yeah.
And the emergency room physician said, look, go home, you know, hope for the best, and then follow up with Dr. Harrison on Monday. So that's what she did, and miraculously the bleeding stopped. She came to our office. We were able to confirm the heartbeat again, and we continued giving progesterone shots twice a week until she was about 28 weeks along.
Nearing the third trimester?
Correct. And then, and, you know, we were following progesterone levels in her system. We wanted to make sure that they were high enough to support her pregnancy, and then she was able to go the rest of the pregnancy without any problem. And so right at 40 weeks gestation, she delivered a perfectly healthy little girl, and that little girl now is 9 years old and having no problems. She's, you know, a cheerleader for her little football team at her elementary school, and she's doing well in school, and she's just a great little girl.
Wonderful. So as far as we know, your encounter in 2006, that was the first abortion pill reversal that was ever done?
Yes, and so I was already in contact with Father Pavone, so I told him about it, and of course he was very excited, and he was saying, look, we need to come up with a protocol to get this news out to people. Now, of course, I was a family practice doctor. I was doing obstetrics, and I delivered babies as well. But I was a family practice doctor, and I was a little bit intimidated about trying to push this without what some people would say the expertise to do it. And my partner in the practice had gone through the fertility training at Pope Paul VI Institute, which is why we had progesterone handy in the office. And so I was essentially following the protocols that were established for fertility problems in women who had low progesterone. And so I talked to several people in different countries who called and asked about the protocol that I used. I had a few interviews that were on the internet and on a few little news programs and, of course, with Father Frank. But we really didn't do a whole lot with it, and it didn't take off. But I got a call in 2011 from Dr. George Delgado, and he and Mary Davenport had been collecting some data on women who had undergone the protocol and had had babies. And he, 2 years after I had my reversal, and without knowing about my reversal, he did his own reversal with progesterone.
Oh.
And he kind of did it over the phone with a patient that was hundreds of miles from where his practice was, but he did it in conjunction with a doctor there. And so he had success with that. And so he started collecting data, and in December of 2012, he and Mary Davenport published a paper that was just a case study that talked about six different cases where women had taken RU46 and then had regretted it and had attempted a reversal. And four out of the six women were able to have successful pregnancies without any complications.
Yeah.
So these case studies, this is commonly how research gets started, is with case studies. Oh, there might be something here. This is something interesting. Maybe we should look into it. And so we started, I got with Dr. Delgado and Dr. Davenport, and we formed this protocol that we've tried to standardize and use and suggest for women that are undergoing reversal. And so it's, the program has grown since 2012. Now there is an abortion pill reversal group, APR, and that's at www.abortionpillreversal.com. We can repeat that at the end again.
Yeah.
But that's a website that's dedicated to showing people how the reversal is done and getting them into a network. And so now we have over 320 doctors on places around the country and around the world that are ready to reverse abortions. And we've had reversals in 14 different countries.
Wow.
And the word has really been getting out that there's hope if a woman changes her mind that we might be able to reverse the procedure.
Yeah, that's great. Can you tell us a little bit about that group, Abortion Pill Reversal, about really how that system works? I mean, if one of us at some point runs into someone who's in this situation, what does that system look like that we can use to help these women?
Yeah, so the nuts and bolts of it is that, you know, typically a woman will go to an abortion clinic, they will witness her taking the pill, and then she will leave. And when they do have a regret and change their mind, generally what happens is they start searching on the internet about abortion pill reversals. And we have lots of, you know, tag search engine, you know, specialists who know what names and words to put in that will direct people to our website, and we have a mobile app as well. And so what it does is it provides the woman with information, but also with a toll-free number. So that toll-free number is staffed by nurses 24 hours a day. And when they call that number, then we find out where the woman is, how far along she is, how long ago she took the abortion pill. And then we find the closest provider to her. Then we connect with that provider, call them, and ask if they can meet the patient and start the reversal process. So our goal is to have it so that, you know, women don't have to go more than an hour to find a doctor or a clinic that can reverse this. And we've talked with several emergency room groups to see if we could get it into those facilities, because that's where a lot of women go when they have an emergency. And then, of course, now we have been able to get it into crisis pregnancy centers that have medical directors. And when the medical directors have protocols set up and the reversals can be done under their supervision, then we've had success there. And so then we follow up with those women. We try to give them shots for the first 3 days and then try to make sure they're getting into a doctor who can follow them throughout the rest of the pregnancy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And we had one of those happen here in Fort Wayne, and it was really exciting. But with all that good news, how is the pro-choice movement dealing with this? The abortion clinics themselves, have you had pushback from them?
Sure, we've had quite a bit, and there's actually been several interviews on news stations and that type of thing regarding it. And of course, they don't like it. You know, it's interesting that they're all for a woman's choice until a woman chooses to keep a baby. And so what they've tried to attack is the science. And unfortunately, many of the clinicians that are performing abortions and are in the system and in the business are not researchers. They really don't understand how research is done. And so they're trying to attack it, saying, well, all you have is a study of six patients, and there's no proof that this works. You know, if we do nothing, the babies will live anyway. Well, the problem is that their own research that's done through the Guttmacher Institute, which is the research arm of Planned Parenthood,
right,
pretty much refutes this. When they were trying to get RU-46 approved in America, they hailed it as the wonder drug that could, you know, perform abortions. It was very effective, and that women would not have to go through surgical abortions, and you know, it was going to cure all ills in the world. But now that's backfiring, because now they're saying, well, maybe RU-46 is not as effective, and maybe babies will live if you just don't do the second part of the procedure, which is the cytotech. Which, of course, they don't. No one ever talks to women about that. They never, if that were the case, then they would have to give proper consent to a woman when they're doing a medical abortion and say, oh, this only works half of the time.
Yeah.
Which would be ridiculous. So what we have found, and we're actually going to come out with a paper that is reviewing all of the known literature on the effectiveness of RU-46. And what we're doing is we're going to show that at the very, very best, their own research shows that there's a maybe up to a 20 to 22% failure rate of RU-46.
That's huge.
To kill an embryo. Now, a lot of theirs go down to 5% and less, saying that RU-46 is very deadly and kills very effectively. But even at their highest failure rate, which the papers show 20 to 22%, our success rate in reversing abortions has consistently been 50 to 53%. And so we still have, you know, 30 percentage numbers there that are showing that we're actually doing something that is beneficial in reversing the abortion.
That's so great. I can, like, not wrap my mind around it. It's fantastic.
Well, and when you think about what other illnesses that we treat in medicine, say, you know, say heart disease, and we treat everyone with cholesterol medicine. Anyone who has a high cholesterol, we give them cholesterol medicine. And doctors push this all day long. Yet you have to treat several hundred patients with cholesterol medicine just to have one improvement of an outcome, just to save one life. You have to treat hundreds. What we're talking about is you have to treat two patients in order to have a statistical improvement in outcome. And so, you know, I think the science is going to come out on our side. You know, this is not the type of thing that you can ethically form a prospective case study on. You can't take, you know, 1,000 women, give them all of them the RU46 abortion pill, and then give half of them progesterone and half of them a placebo.
Right.
I mean, that must be what, you know, the pro-abortion lobby is wanting to see. And, of course, they don't seem to be very interested in women's health anyway. But that's what they would want to see, and that is completely unethical to do that. So this all needs to be in what we call retrospective case studies. We need to find women that have unfortunately taken RU46 and find those that want to reverse and then proceed with a treatment. Now, we are coming up with some possibilities of could we treat some differently and still ensure safety for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, we'd want the easiest, quickest, most pain-free, most inexpensive way of helping moms save their babies.
Right.
And so right now our protocol calls for injections, which can be painful and they can be inconvenient. And even though they're not terribly expensive, I mean, a full course throughout the pregnancy is only going to cost a couple hundred dollars.
Oh.
Yeah. If we were able to use, you know, progesterone suppositories or less shots, you know, we could even make it more accessible to women.
Right. Well, we are just about out of time, so thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Harrison. It was wonderful to have you on and have you here to talk to us about all this. Could you just, for our listeners, really quickly recap for us, where can they find your website?
Yes, so the website is www.abortionpillreversal.com, and that will have the toll-free number and everything available. If people want to become providers, in other words, if physicians are listening to this, they want to become providers or crisis pregnancy centers, then they can go to that website, contact our office, and we can get you set up with that. It also has, you know, links to how this works. There are slideshows, there's pamphlets, there's all types of information there at abortionpillreversal.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was wonderful to have you on.
All right. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to iChooseLife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.